Okay. There we go. So this is a name that, well, anybody who's paying attention to comments section in this little corner will recognize this name, because I don't know if this is your real name or not, but this is the name you go by. So
I'm Lynette. So yeah, I go by Lynn.
Nice to meet you, Lynn. Where shall we begin? Shall we begin with you? You want to tell us about yourself?
Well, I was conceived in 1969 when we walked on the moon.
Oh. All right.
So you know what my dad was thinking. He was an opportunist. I'm the youngest of three. I was born in southern Idaho. So I'm an Idahoan, like the doctor dude.
Oh, Dr. Jim.
Born on a farm.
What kind of farm?
Huh?
What kind of farm? Cattle?
Cow. Yeah. Do you remember when President Carter passed a law basically that you had to put your cow milk through a special system. You couldn't just sell it in the early 70s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's when my family basically sold their cows, and my mom, they started working like Tupperware. My mom got a job at Tupperware, so we moved to the town. So
some of you who are old enough will remember Tupperware parties, mm-hmm. where, you know, this was sort of a direct marketing strategy, and women would have Tupperware parties, and you'd have a whole group of women in a living room, and oh, look, you can, and we had all kinds of Tupperware growing up. And then, of course, pretty soon, lots of other things would come in plastic containers. And so that was sort of, you know, that was sort of free Tupperware. So you didn't have to buy the fancy Tupperware. You just use the old margarine container.
Yeah, my mom worked in the manufacturing plant. She was in finish pack, so she would put all the Tupperware orders in boxes, and then wow. They would sell. Mm-hmm. I was raised Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh, okay.
Very strict, very Seventh-day Adventist. We didn't eat pork. We went to church on Saturday, which is the real Sabbath.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was taught. I don't know.
No, Saturday is the real Sabbath. I mean, Christians sort of switch it over to Sunday because it's the day of the resurrection. But Adventists, you know, are very... Adventism is one of those 19th century movements that went through with a lot of, well, just read the Bible and do what it says. I mean, you hear that all the time, but people have been, you know, trying to figure that out for a long time.
We read Ellen G. White right next to the Bible. So yep. Ellen G. White was a woman in the early 1800s. And she, I guess the term now would be downloaded. So, she sat in church and got downloaded. I don't know what the correct term is. We call it downloading now. So.
There was revelation.
Yeah, revelation. There. So, my dad was a Jack Mormon, so he never went to church. On dad's side, my great-grandparents were married in the Salt Lake Temple. So she was a daughter of a polygamist in the Mormon, but dad never participated. It was just mom taking us three kids to church every day.
And for those who don't live in the Western United States might not know what a Jack Mormon is, but there's all over the place here. I didn't know any of this stuff until I moved to California. Then suddenly there are Jack Mormons and you learn all of this stuff.
I don't know where the Jack Mormon term came from. It was
I don't know either.
A term.
It's just what you call them for backslidden Mormons.
Yeah, people that don't participate in the church yet. Yep. Once you are baptized a Mormon, or
once you're sealed.
Well, I know I've been baptized for the Mormon Church because of my family being so Mormon on dad's side. So they baptize for people that
yep.
are in their ancestry chain.
Right. And even beyond, if you don't bother going to church, the Mormons will cover your baptism for you. Another controversial little aspect of the LDS religion.
Yeah. So when I was seven, a significant event, I was diagnosed with an eye disease called retinitis pigmentosa, RP. So it's tunnel vision for those people who don't know. So a person can have 20/20 vision, a very clear central vision, and be legally blind because there's no peripheral vision. So I'm somebody who has, I have no peripheral vision and only this central vision.
That's interesting.
When I was 7 years old, okay, so I remember going home from the doctor very vividly. And my sister, my older sister, I'm the youngest sister. And my older sister's like, so what'd the doctor say? You know, because I had been night blind and been terrified of night time. And my mom's like, well, the doctor said when she's old, she'll be blind. And so in my little seven-year-old mind, I had this image of, oh, when I'm 18, I'm going to be blind suddenly.
Yeah, because 18 is old when you're seven.
Right. My sister just told me the other day, oh, that in your 80s or 90s is what the doctor meant. I was like, well, you know, I didn't know. So in my whole life, I've had this belief that I'm just going to suddenly be stricken with blindness. But it's just something that's been gradually taken from me, my vision, my whole life.
Hmm.
So as a young person, well, in high school, reading long a lot gave me migraine headaches. So, and then I had cataracts in both my eyes and then inflammation. So I've had laser surgery in both my eyes. So it's just something that just having to deal with not reading very well. I read, but it's like I skim things. So I think I've sat down and read maybe 20 books in my life. So it's not that I can't read. It's the fact that after a paragraph, I start getting headaches. It's very painful. And then, I go down this, migraine headaches, and it just kind of, so I don't use my vision like a normal sighted person would.
And so I would imagine, so I'm dyslexic. And so actually over the last number of years, YouTube and audiobooks, and I mean, those things have been huge for me. It's not that I didn't read, I read plenty, but maybe it's just because now I can take in books and podcasts and things while I'm driving, while I'm doing the dishes, while I've been chopping up bamboo. We planted some bamboo in the backyard. We did clumping bamboo, at least we looked ahead, but the bamboo really goes. So I have to cut it down pretty regularly and then try to dispose of it. So, you know, audio has always been a real boon for me.
Well, as a kid, I went to college and graduated. But when I was going to college, I got connected with the Commission for the Blind to help me.
Yep.
And so they would connect me with this something called Talking Book.
Yep.
And so in the days, we had these big recorders and these cassettes.
Yeah.
And so you'll do the Talking Book. But the problem with them, I always fell asleep to them because some of them are so tired. I mean, they're so boring. But nowadays, it really has improved. I mean, there's more, it's like there's something about the quality has improved from when.
Yeah.
In the 80s when I was listening to the Talking Books.
Yeah. What did you study in school?
I have a Bachelor of Arts degree in social work.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Have you done anything with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I worked. So I wanted to be a doctor, but my mom started freaking out. you don't want to work with sick people. And so she went on this tangent. So I chose social work because the classes were really easy and I didn't need a lot of reading to do them. I could go to the class and I can listen audio and then skim, you know, and then, and so I read 4 books in college with
wow.
So it's about listening.
Yep. You know? Yep. Yep. Yep.
And anyway, so when I graduated, I worked with the developmentally disabled population and then in near Blackfoot, Idaho. And I moved to Vegas and I worked in a nursing home, the largest one in Nevada at the time.
Oh, so interesting.
I was a social worker in a big nursing home for.
Okay.
And then I moved to Colorado Springs and worked in a nursing home there. And then I moved home to Idaho because my vision declined in Colorado. And I just, the world, everything changed. It was around 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with my vision declining and then going on Social Security disability,
mm-hmm.
It's like I can then, you know, move to a remote town. And so I moved to Salmon, Idaho, which is, and it's like halfway between Northern Idaho and Southern Idaho.
I think I've been there. I mean, my wife and I like to take long driving vacations, and the West is perfect for this because there is so much. I mean, Idaho, Utah, Montana. Nevada's a little dull in a lot of places, but Idaho, Utah, Montana, these are lovely places for us. There's just miles and miles of beautiful wilderness. So
I love Idaho as well. I mean, I moved 2 years ago to Washington State. So I'm here in Washington State now, but in something about you can drive for miles and not see a person at all.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
Idaho. But the winters are cold. I mean,
You won't find me there in the winter. My wife doesn't like cold. Plus it's harder to get around, but the summers, just so many canyons and wilderness and scrub. And it's just lovely. Lovely. I love that kind of, those kind of spaces.
Yeah, we grew up in the Snake River Canyon. So that's where Evel Knievel jumped the Snake River Canyon.
Yep.
I remember that.
Not really in a motorcycle.
Well, okay, he didn't make it. He went to the bottom.
Right.
And broke everybody.
I remember watching that as a kid. Just like.
Yeah, I'm from there. That's the area where I'm from.
But the canyon is very dramatic. You're just driving along and suddenly there's this massive, long, you know, it's almost like someone just cut this canal out of the earth and it's deep. So it's really cool. Yeah.
It's very
beautiful. We were at Craters of the Moon a couple summers ago, and I love Craters of the Moon National Monument. You know, there's just so many national parks and national monuments all throughout the West. And like Craters of the Moon, not many people there. And, you know, it's not dramatic like Yosemite, but it's just beautiful and isolated and quiet and wildernessy and just wonderful.
Do you like spelunking?
Oh, yeah.
Caving. Yeah.
Yeah. Good caves. So
I don't know. I my brother took me to a cave and it's near the Shoshone Ice Caves. And there was bats on the ceiling. And then there's something creepy about in the cave where it's like, if there's an earthquake, you're dead instantly. It's just very claustrophobic.
It could collapse. That's true.
Between the bats and the
earthquakes. All right. So I keep getting distracting you from your story. So keep going. I'll shut up now.
Please don't.
So you're doing social work, you're moving around. How on earth did you find this little corner? Because you're one of the OGs around here. You've been around a while and you know, not just leaving comments on my channel. You're over there by Grizz, and I mean you're all over the place here. So
I meditated with Manuel and Mark with Verbeke's
Awakening.
Wisdom. No, it's the one before Between Awakening, and when COVID hit.
So oh yeah, yeah. COVID his daily wisdom videos.
So yeah, I meditated with them for a year and a half.
Okay.
2 years, and then I did Lectio with Mark Emanuel for a year.
Okay.
I've only won one argument with Mark.
And Mark won't agree to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, there's one argument I absolutely won, and that is Vervaeke is a boomer.
Oh.
And you're a boomer. So
really?
I know, baby boomers, yeah.
I'm a boomer, huh? I was born in 63. I got some boomer in me, but I think I got some Xer in me, too.
Yeah, he insisted that you all were Xers. I said, no, they're all boomers.
Why are we boomers, and what does that mean?
No, I Google it. I'm just telling you, that's what Google said.
Vervaeke's John's a little, I don't know, is there a Wikipedia page on John? There isn't one on me. So I don't know if there is. It's very interesting to see who there are Wikipedia pages on and who there aren't. Let's see.
Sure there is. Vervaeke.
John Vervaeke, Department of Psychology. Everybody Wiki. No, that's not Wikipedia. Who is John Vervaeke? Everybody Wiki. I do not see a John Vervaeke Wikipedia page.
All right. Well, I don't know how they found it. They found
I don't
it
know
on
how.
Their amazing stuff they do.
John is a little older than I am. So I am turning 60 this year. John's closer to retirement than I am. I think he's 62 or 63. Peterson's a year older than I am. So, but there's a whole bunch of us that are right there born in the 60s. And you said you were conceived in 69. So you're born in 70?
Born in 70. My sister's turning 60 this year as well. So you're my sister's age, my oldest sister.
Okay. And how many siblings do you have?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the youngest. Okay. And there's three of us.
So how did you find this little corner? Is it the Peterson thing that you kind of...
Okay. So I need to go back. In the early 90s, I think I was in college at the time. So I was raised Seventh-day Adventist. Very much baptized in the Adventist church, going to church, following the Adventist religion, very much in that world. Then in 92, wait, I was like 22, 23, somewhere around there. I was watching a musician on television, a very prominent lesbian woman, and I suddenly became attracted to this woman on the television. So in that moment, it was my body had deceived me. You know, at one point I was this Adventist, you know, being part of the promised land, being against homosexuals, and then at the other point it was like being deceived by God. And Mark LaFavre says, you were enchanted by a lesbian. I don't know, but I'm...
That is so something Mark would say.
I don't know, but it was... I was... At that point, I became an atheist.
Oh, okay? Interesting.
So that was the point I became an atheist. And I considered myself bisexual, so...
Did this happen suddenly?
Yeah, it was very... It was that moment of recollection that I was attracted to this woman.
Huh.
And it was just a moment of, okay, God doesn't exist. It was like becoming instantly atheism, you know. So there was nothing that I gleaned at all from the Adventist tradition after that. It was like being deceived by God is how it felt internally. And so after that, I was with a man, but my brother says my picker was broken. So I failed miserably as a wife. Okay. And then I got into a relationship with a woman, and I was with a woman for 12 years. And so at this point, there's one thing I really wanted to communicate to anyone who is having a similar thing, is after that relationship failed with this woman, that was my spiritual crisis. But I wanted to communicate that when you're in a long-term relationship with the same sex after many, many years, my example was 12 years, there's things missing. If you're a bisexual, there's things missing out of that relationship that affects your quality of life 12 years later, or you know, many, many years later. So the contrast of a man and woman in a relationship affects the quality of that relationship. Now, if you look at somebody who's been married 50 years, there's this thing, well, they begin to look alike. A lot of times when you're in the same sex relationship, you begin looking alike. And as the relationship goes on and on and on, there's dead ends. So there's this automatic like contrast that happens within a relationship that's a man and a woman. And that contrast begins to go into, it's not there. And so it doesn't flourish. Now I want to add another thing. This, what I'm going to tell you now, I wanted to communicate as well. Mark LaFavre says this is propaganda. So choose your narrative. God number one, God number two, but whatever narrative you want to choose. So I was taught in college, okay, that sexuality is a bell curve. On one side, you have homosexuals, and on the other, you have heterosexuals. And us bisexual people are in the middle, so we're attracted to both, okay, in the bell curve.
Oh, okay, I see.
So, you know, the bell curve goes up and down.
Yeah.
Homosexuals.
Straight gay on one side, yeah.
And bisexuals in the middle, okay?
Right.
So Peterson mentions how intelligence affects this bell curve. He mentioned it once, but he hasn't gone deep into it. But I thought, gosh, that was interesting. But the other part of it is people on this side don't know what it's like to be on this side, and people on this side don't know what it's like to be on this side. So as somebody who's experienced my life there, okay, up here, that's what I've gleaned from again. So take what you will with that. But
I think men and women are different in that respect too. I think men are much less bell curvy. I think men kind of inverted. I think men tend to be a little bit more one or the other, and women tend to be a little bit more fluid. That's just my anecdotal observation, but what do I know?
You're in a relationship and you're a woman and you're on birth control. I've heard somewhere on YouTube, and I can't quote it, birth control may affect your attraction to same sex. So it may affect so just be aware of that. If you're experiencing the same sex attraction, it might be your birth control. It might be other factors. So don't just automatically assume, I'm totally gay and go join a pride fest. I mean, if you want to do that, you can. I'm just saying your quality of life might be affected in 10 or 15 years. Okay.
That idea is totally cruel because it's like you get on birth control because you want to have a relationship with men. You're on birth control, you start being attracted to women. So then it's like, what do I need to be on this birth control for? So you get off it. And, I mean, it's just, I'm sure it doesn't happen that way, but it's just sort of an amusing thought.
Okay. So anyway, okay. So, okay. So I wanted to get that out there. Okay. So I'm in a relationship with a woman and it's, the contrast isn't there. I'm seriously missing men. And I find that everyone around me are lacking intelligence. So they're making poor choices. And my capacity to make good choices seems to be screwed up somehow. It's like everything, this is a new age. Everything that's coming to me that's attracted to me. It seems like everything in my life is not intelligent. It's dead end. And so I reach out for, what's new age stuff now, but I reached out for a way to be able to manage my life. And so that's when I started the Eckhart Tolle teachings, Living in the Now, Byron Katie, doing her shadow work with Byron Katie. She has this Judging Your Neighbor's worksheet. You do some shadow work with it. And I had I was totally sober. So it was like no sugar, no caffeine, no alcohol. Before that, I had been using prescription drugs, quit that, quit everything, and started doing this practice, which improved my quality of life. But I suddenly had some mystical experiences. So for the next 5 years, I had mystical experiences. But as Jonathan Bigeau and a lot of people would say, you don't assign or you don't attract, you don't do meaning with it. It's like you pretend it doesn't happen.
Right.
And
well, it's kind of like dream in our culture. Mystical experiences are kind of, that's like dreams. And culturally we tend to sort of push dreams off to the side too.
Right. And so I started watching Rebel Wisdom, seeing Peterson on Joe Rogan, and Daniel Schmachtenberger.
Yep.
He talked about having a non-rivalrous relationship with the world versus a rivalrous relationship with the world. And that's when something happened at that. I'm like, oh, so there's a way that you can interact with the world that's non-rivalrous, which versus using the Eckhart Tolle practices of being in the present moment and totally accepting the moment how it is. There's, you just have to accept the sorrowness of others in a way, versus non-rivalry. And with that, I started listening to Verveke's Awakening from the Meaning Crisis. And it was hard because he stutters and it drove me nuts. But after, he got better. So I watched the second half first and then I watched the first half. And I realized that I was like with the politics in episode 25. There's a way of you thinking will to power. So there's certain things that I had assumed with my new age stuff. One of them was free will. I was in the Sam Harris camp of there's no free will. And Verveke in that will to power episode really started breaking open that, oh, well, maybe I do have agency. Versus none. And so that's when I started figuring out how to get on Discord. And it's very challenging because of my vision. I don't like to learn new things. I like having the same old patterns. I don't particularly like, I don't enjoy learning something new or even putting myself out there that much.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard. And then with that, even after that awakening from the meaning crisis, I had even more mystical experiences. But at a point I also grabbed onto the mystical and just decided, well, maybe that was God trying to communicate to me the mystical experiences. And so that narrative is why I'm here today, is perhaps the mystical experiences were given to me by God to show that he exists. But then again, there's a spirit part of this that Mark and Manuel both say, well, how do you know that that's a good spirit or a bad spirit? And so anyway, so that's.
Now tell me about your mystical experiences.
So I sent you a picture yesterday.
Yeah, that was a cool picture. I like that picture.
So I'm going to call them crop circles in the sky. That's what it was like. It was, okay. Again, oops. I hope nothing synchronicity. I didn't intend for synchronicities, but this is what started it. Is okay. I seen a vision in the sky of a face. One eye you could see all the way through. So like one eye was empty and one eye didn't exist. So when you go God number one and God number two, that began this meaning for me. The crop circle in the sky looked very much like that cross. And it happened. I got a hold of the person who took that picture, and it happened at the very same time, similar summer as when, well, it repeated. So the first time I seen this face was in 2013, and then I seen it in 2014, and then I seen it again in 2015, and I haven't seen it since. So that was the main thing why I watched Awakening from the Meaning Crisis, is because I thought, well, maybe I'm not supposed to ignore it. Maybe it is something that is meaningful and important. Yeah.
That's a really cool picture.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Well, my dogs are barking. Like, they're going crazy.
The world is back as it should be.
The world is back as it should be. Oh, that's a good thing.
So. So you've had a very interesting journey. You were raised Adventist. You had this interesting journey in terms of sexuality and partnership. You had awakenings along the way about the relationship between the compare and contrast heterosexual and homosexual relationships. You sort of rapidly deconstructed, and then you've had mystical experiences, and it's interesting. I mean, part of it is so when I did my conversation with, there's another doctor, Dr. James, who lives here in Sacramento, and he's a regular at our meetups, and he's been on the channel a couple times. He talks about dreaming. You know, there are a lot of theories that we're constantly dreaming. It's just that when we're awake in the world right here, the manifest image is just so pervasive, it keeps us glued in. But probably with your increasingly low vision, some of those boundaries are going to get fluid. And I'm not trying to dismiss or sort of secularize your visions or be skeptical about them, but it's, you know, there's something that we have culturally when we see blind people. We tend to look at blind people and wonder, are they seeing things we're not seeing? And that's an interesting conversation. So you wind up in Rebel Wisdom, and that brings you to John Vervaeke and Jordan Peterson and this little corner, and then Awakening from the Meaning Crisis Discord. And Discord is by no means the most friendly interface invented by human coders. I always call Mark and Manuel the twins, because they did so much together, and they're kind of, you know, I talked to both of them yesterday. They're an interesting pairing. It's interesting the way those two sort of found a bit of synergy together, because, you know, and that was a whole part of both the Awakening from the Meaning Crisis Discord server and the Bridges of Meaning Discord server, and some of the interesting overlap between those two things. And so you did the meditation. So where are you at right now in terms of, you're raised Seventh-day Adventist. Did you go back to Adventism, or thing right now?
It's so hard. I'm like, I guess, Mark and Vervaeke in that way, to participate in church. I just, you know, so I have been, 2 months ago, a raven was caught in my chimney. And I prayed for that raven, and a miracle happened. After 3 days of this raven being in the chimney, I heard a clunk, and I opened up the fireplace, and there he was, this bird. And I thought for sure, after listening to the scratches in my chimney, that this bird was toast. I mean, in this chimney. I thought, oh, we're gonna have to dig out a dead corpse out of the chimney. And so he flew out and hit the window, and I got a blanket and threw him outside. And it was that point. Miracles happen. Oh, I just, it was so grateful that this raven had lived out of this 3 days in my chimney. And that's when I listened to Tammy Peterson and her teaching it. She does it. Her and Peugeot has a video on how to do the rosary. So I bought a rosary, and I've been praying the rosary, which is sacrilege to any Adventist, because Adventists have issues with crosses. Adventists have issues with, maybe not the new Adventists, but traditional Adventists. Okay.
Those who don't understand Adventism, again, they're Jehovah's Witnesses, LDS, Adventism. They all come out of this burned over area of New York. It's burned over area because both Great Awakenings went through, and it's like not a soul was left untouched. It's a very intense 19th century Protestant movement. And, you know, no alcohol. You know, if you just look at the ideas that are in the frontier in the 18th, 19th century, which is New York State, very intense.
Well, I was taught Catholics were evil. So right. Catholics were the 666. Okay?
Right, right.
And yeah. Then you're praying with a rosary. I mean, it's just, but I find it so lethargic is the best way to put it, to pray the rosary. And then I'm coming back to that thing in the Bible where it says, build your house on rock, not of sand. And Mark and Manuel helped me figure out what was rock and what was sand. I mean, they're very disagreeable people, both of them. And they're never going to agree with you on anything, but, or at least if they do, they won't tell it to your face. But
Okay, God loves disagreeable too. Well, like, why would he have made so many of them? There's a lot of them are in this little corner, I'll tell you, and a lot of them are in my meetup.
I don't know where I was. So the fact that I'm praying the rosary, you know, going, so it's small steps. It's small steps, okay? That I'm taking. And so and that's another thing about mystical experiences that I want to warn people about. People, oh, I wish I had one. Not necessarily, because it's really, if you don't have a foundation, I mean, it took me many years to even get to the point where I could talk to you rationally. I mean, it's been 7 years since I had the last major one. And it's taken that long for me to talk to you like a normal human being versus being out there in a mental illness land. I mean, so, you know, there's a fine line between mystical experiences and mental illness. So I just want to warn you about praying for it or wanting it, because it's not necessarily, it's recognizing the spirits of God.
Trying to induce it with pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I mean, and at the beginning of the awakening from the meaning crisis, people don't understand the type of people that Mark Emanuel had to deal with, the mentally ill people, the people on, people would do mushrooms and go on the Discord server, and we are sitting in, or drink alcohol, and we're sitting trying to do maps of meaning at a watch party so we can learn and grow together. And these people are, you know, go online, get drunk, do mushrooms, do all this stuff. And then of course the mentally ill people off their medication would go on the Discord server. So there's a lot of mystical places that they show you with their build your house of rock view. So anyway.
Well, I know, you know, from the years, let's see, Bridges of Meaning started 2019, 2018. So Bridges of Meaning, I mean, Joey and Tyler and Rick got it going out of our local meetup. And I don't know who started the Awakening from the Meaning Crisis. Awakening from the Meaning Crisis came a little bit later. I don't remember when the first John released his first video, because of course he had Buddhism and Cognitive Science. There were recordings of that, but the sound was terrible. They were unwatchable. And then Awakening from the Meaning Crisis, he had, you know, some people up, but that was before the pandemic. The pandemic sort of shut a lot of John down.
When COVID hit is when, let's say March of 2020. So when COVID hit, that's when John did his meditation series on YouTube, and that's right. When I found it. And it had started probably a couple months before then, maybe 4 or 5 months. Mark and Manuel, you know, they know, they're computer people. They know this stuff. But me, I was like, just trying to figure it out. Go on, you know, the computer and also the techniques that John was teaching, you know.
So how did you find John's meditation helpful? How did that help you? What did that help you with?
Grounding. There's a experience that you have that you feel in your gut. And there's an experience you have you feel in your heart. And there's intellectual experiences. So in order to point them all in a hierarchy to the light or to the good, there has to be a leveling out, or there has to be a recognizing them and pointing them in the right direction. So when people say, oh, I heard God, or it's really so hard to figure out what the heck are they talking about versus, oh, a feeling in your gut. Oh, it's nauseous. Oh, well, maybe that's, is that a bad thing or is that a good thing? Or the feeling in your heart, well, having an open heart can be deceitful in the sense that people can, you don't want to open your heart out and people will trample all over you in a sense, unless you have it lined up. So Adi Shanti, he's another spiritual teacher, talks about head awakening, heart awakening, and gut awakening. And so the meditation series helped me align the alignment in those three, because I thought, oh, it's all about love, it's about your heart, it's about, okay, yes, that, you know, when I felt it in my heart, well, maybe, but maybe there's something in your gut that might be a wiser choice. And having that discernment and recognizing it within my body is the main thing. But then also communicating with Mark and Manuel, who they're so rooted in, you know, their house on the, they're so rooted in what they know is right, is that there's no, it's they have a really good pointing. So there's things that I believed that I didn't recognize I believed, and that they, like, you know, basically said that's BS. But then there's still things that I still believe that I don't talk to them about.
Right.
That I'm never going to talk to them about. That,
oh, I do love those guys. I do love those guys. I just talked to them yesterday. And
there's one more thing I want to say about a serious play that John Verbeke talks about. So testing the spirits. Now, I don't know what a Christian would think about testing the spirits, but I don't know. But he talks about serious play. And so I have a hat. It's my picker hat. It's like, oh, who's that, you know, you were talking about, the person they go on the hat and they just, and anyway. Yeah.
The Hogwarts hat.
Hogwarts hat. So that's another thing John Verbeke, Awakening from the Meaning Crisis, did. If you can go into serious play and test, is it true in your gut? Is it true in your heart? Is it just intellectually true or not true? And Mark and Manuel are very smart, smart people. They're smarter than me. And so those of us that don't have the intelligence they have, we don't want to get deceived by a cult. So we need discernment. And so,
well, that's true. That's very true. I mean, a lot of discerning the spirits, especially in the Protestant world, is it's certainly using scripture, and part of it's the community too of the church to help people discern. You look for wisdom in the body of Christ and those who know more than you do. And because obviously there's a lot of things we bump into this world that aren't in scripture as such. And so, you know, this is where, of course, we have the church. But there's human beings have a real capacity to find ourselves in ditches. And the funny thing about a ditch is you usually need somebody to help you get out of it. You usually don't get out of a ditch by yourself, otherwise it's not a ditch. It's just a stumble. And where do you want to go with this now? I think there are a number of things that you wanted to say, and I think you said them well.
thing I wanted to say. That's I wanted to get my input on your relationship stuff about same, because if you are attracted to the same sex, it's not the end all to your relationship or your heterosexuality. It really can be the Jungian shadow. It really, really can be. And so that's the main thing I wanted to input and communicate to those of you that may have experienced it. And
it's, I mean, we find ourselves as human beings attracted to a lot of things. And it was John Newton who wrote the hymn Amazing Grace. I can't remember off the top of myself what his motto was. I think his motto was never deliberate, which meant that in his young life, the minute he sensed some attraction or an impulse, he would act on it immediately. And I mean, John Newton became this astounding leader in the church in his older age, but his motto of never deliberating as a young man landed him in worlds of trouble. The biography is out there. It's an autobiography. It's a memoir. It's out there in public domain. And it's quite a read in terms of what that young man did. I mean, in some ways, our world, many of our worlds are so tame. American West, not quite so much. You've got plenty of wilderness in the American West. You can get yourself into interesting places. But our world is so tame compared to, like, John Newton, who winds up, you know, working on slave ships, winds up working basically in a slave camp, winds up becoming enslaved himself for crossing the kind of the big man. Eventually you would have to look back at his motto and say, that wasn't such a good motto. You know, when something grabs you, whether it be a mystical experience or an impulse or an attraction, to decide, I'm just going to follow every attraction that comes my way. Well, you probably won't do that for long, partly because, number one, lots of attractions come. And number two, life is the kind of thing that following something leads you to different places. We like to imagine ourselves as steering our way through life, but that's only looking at the agentic and not the arenic. And part of what we do as agents is we steer ourselves into different arenas and we change the arenas. And often the arenas are not necessarily to our liking. So, I've appreciated this. I mean, because again, I've seen your name in comments and live streams, and you're around this little corner quite a bit. And so it's always so much fun to get a higher resolution at the people that we're just sort of bumping into each other in this little corner, and to hear some tales from, you know, because Mark and Manuel were telling me about the meditation rooms and what they were doing. And because I know that was big in Manuel's story too. He spent a long time in the basement of Bridges of Meaning. And it was great to meet him when I went to Europe. It's always so much more fun to meet someone in person. Are you coming to the Chino event?
No, May is morel picking season. So my boyfriend and I, we go out every in the spring and we pick morel mushrooms. Oh. It's my most favorite thing to do in life. We go on these. So morel mushrooms, they fruit on pine trees. So you have to go where the pine trees are. And they basically, when the lilac bushes are blooming, in that area, that's when you can see, that's when they fruit underneath the pine trees. And so we walk for miles and miles and miles in the woods, up and down mountains, and we look for morel mushrooms. And we do that in the spring, and then we look for chanterelles in the fall. And we look for king boletes as well, and spring kings also as well. So May is mushroom pick. It's my most, it brings me so much joy.
There'll be other events. There'll be other events.
I'm selfish. I'm not sacrificing my morel picking mushroom weekends for you. Sorry.
Hey, it's not about me. It's to me, these.
I don't want to see Grizz Graham in a jock strap either.
I don't think any of us want to see that. So sorry, Grizz. I love you, but no.
Please.
On a cross in a jock strap. I'll pass. Thank you, but no thanks. But no, there'll be other events. There'll be other times. In fact, the person I just spoke with before this and he gave permission to share. It sounds like that you'd be okay with me sharing this conversation.
Well,
too.
I didn't share anything. I wouldn't. Okay. I just need to add though. I love Mark and Manuel. They helped me a lot and they helped a lot of people. And so I don't, just because they're very disagreeable and they don't.
Nothing you said led me to believe you didn't love them. I love them too. They are disagreeable. They can be an acquired taste at times, but I see them both as genuinely wanting to help people and generous with their time. But like, again, part of what this little corner has attracted is a lot of people who on the Big Five personality are very highly disagreeable. And
I'm an agreeable person. So, but again, contrast, you know, how do you, you need that contrast in relationships and intimacy in order to
missing the mark.
Yeah.
No,
so
you do.
When you,
you
hit
need,
the mark.
Yeah, you do need disagreeable people are a blessing to us all, because otherwise the human race just sort of becomes lemmings, you know? Off we go. And disagreeable people, well, you know, they're never going to be a lemming. Now, they might miss out on a whole bunch of other stuff because they're just too ornery and disagreeable, but they'll never be lemmings. Anyway, Lynn, this was a joy. It's so good to get to know you, and we will miss you in Chino. But like I said, I was just talking to someone who lives up on Bainbridge Island, and we have a lot of people. And I hope, you know, my goal is that we'll continue having events, big and small, in different parts of the world, and so people can get together and meet other people and have good conversations and make new friends, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you, Lynn.
Time and attention. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Take care.